This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And as the US eventing team return home from the Rio Olympic Games this week, we hear from the individual bronze medal winner Philip Dutton about his performance with Mighty Nice. And then David O'Connor, the team chef de keep and coach, will be reviewing the games from his perspective. And we begin with Philip Dutton, who joins us now from his home in Pennsylvania. Well, Philip, first of all, congratulations and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Well, I know you've only just touched the ground again, I'm sure, after a whirlwind trip down there to Rio, but obviously it's a wonderful thing to have an individual medal. I'm sure you would have liked to have come home with the team as well, but for someone who's such a seasoned Olympian, dare we say, how did this one compare, if you can compare it, in terms of your overall impression and experience of an Olympic Games?
Well, certainly the venue was very good, quite horse-friendly, and it wasn't over the top as far as grandiose or anything like that, but certainly everything was catered to and the horses were kept in a really good, safe and healthy conditions and environment, and it was run very efficiently and, friendly but punctual and, all of that kind of thing. And obviously the cross country was very, very influential, and I think that took most people by surprise a bit, because traditionally for the last certainly three or four Olympics, cross country hasn't been that difficult, and so it was a nail-biting finish right to the end. And so overall, I think, the Brazilians should be, proud of what they did. Obviously, it's a little bit different result than, different competition than what most people have expected, that's all.
Well, we should remind everybody that you have some experience at the Olympic Games, having won the team gold in Atlanta in 96 and in Sydney in 2000. This is not a new environment for you, but I would imagine pretty special to win that individual medal, Philip, on a horse that has always been outstanding in its consistency, Mighty Nice. What were your expectations realistically going into these games, Philip?
Well, I mean, I was, really hoping probably more for I thought we had a good chance of a team medal. I was probably more 90% thinking of a team medal than 10% thinking of an individual medal. And again, because of the idea that the cross country was probably not going to be as strong as, and that the, it would be decided a little bit more on the dressage and show jumping, which wasn't the case, obviously. And, Mighty Nice has always been a very talented horse. The dressage, and he's always been a great cross-country horse, and the dressage and the show jumping, it's always been a little bit difficult for him to differentiate between those two phases, and he gets, tends to be a little bit tense in the dressage and then be a little bit too cross-country-ish in the show jumping. And it worked a lot this year with Richard Picken, and we traveled to lots of different show jumping shows, and just to try to get him to understand that once he gets in the ring to settle down and relax and use his enormous jump that he's got. And to be quite honest, I was kind of thinking that the Olympics might be a little, a couple of months or 6 months a bit too early for him as far as show jumping goes, but bless his heart, he went in there and jumped beautifully in the show jumping and actually moved us up. So it was a great, great surprise for me.
Give us your impressions, first of all, Philip, of the dressage phase itself there. You finished on 43.6. How does that compare with his previous performances? And give us a sense of the atmosphere there in Rio at the Deodoro Stadium.
Well, the score in a four-star was, that's a personal best for him. And, all credit to David O'Connor, who is a great, great dressage, has a great understanding and has a great chemistry with me on the flat. And I think he, I know he really loves Happy. And so, we sort of have been working you know, obviously pretty closely with him since he was named, you know, when Cubalon dropped out. And, yeah, he just sort of got better and better every day. And I was really excited about the way he was working. And, you know, it was his best score to date at the four-star, and obviously he still missed a change, you know, I missed a change on him at the end. And so there was, you know, I think he could have got pretty close to a 40 there. But, I mean, I'm not, you know, I was thrilled with the way he went, because being last to go, there is a fair bit of atmosphere. And, yeah, the Brazilians certainly quite a noisy and vocal crowd. And so they were good in that that once the competition got started, you know, the commentators announcing people educated them to not to applaud during the test, but, you know, they certainly went wild after everybody finished their tests. And so that was, you know, a little bit hard for higher-strung horses to get used to. And so, you know, certainly my horse was on edge, but as soon as I got him in the arena, he sort of, he started to know what job he's got to do and stayed really well focused all the way through, which, you know, was a bit difficult for some of the horses, especially going at the end of the day like that.
Well, going on to the cross country here to Pierre Michelet's courses, you've ridden those before, of course, at the World Equestrian Games in Normandy a few years ago. A familiar change, as you said, in terms of the style. That is what you would have been expecting, no doubt, of his courses. Fingerprints on those type of courses are distinct in Europe as to what you've seen elsewhere in the world. But how did this compare in terms of his typical courses, Philip, and what you were thinking might be his style in Rio, and how did it ride?
Yeah, I mean, he does have a, you know, a style like you talked about of you know, these acute angles on forward distances, and certainly I think the course in Normandy was a bigger dimension course, but this course I think had, you know, another 10 degrees or 15 degrees sharper angle than was seen before on the lines that you had to that your horse had to keep to go the direct routes. And so, and added to that, the course was, you know, there's a lot of jumps, you know, 40 obstacles, obviously 30 something jumps, but combinations, it was close to 40, you know, 10 minutes and 15 second course. And so, you know, the pressure was on all the way around to, you know, to get close to the time, and that in itself puts added strain on the horses and pressure on the riders. And so you know, I think it was just it was technical, but it was also, you know, big enough. And then added to that, you know, you had terrain, and then as well as, you know, quite a lot of turning and you know, to make the time. So generally, there's just pressure on the horse and riders all the way around, and it obviously showed up. We're fortunate, you know, there wasn't too many of the horse falls, but there's a few of those, but generally people come out of it okay.
How about the footing there then, Philip, and the the climate, of course, and it was winter in Rio, but still you had some heat on some of the days. How did you deal with that? How did the horses generally deal with that?
Yes, I mean, it's pretty close to the equator, so I think the temperature is pretty similar winter to summer. But, yeah, a couple of days before the cross country, it did get pretty warm, you know, talking in the 80s, sort of certainly not as bad as we have here during the summer, but it was hot, and in some places, you know, it's a bit hard to get out of the heat, and especially, you know, in the arenas, they reflect the heat a lot. So, you know, it did get warm. The cross-country day wasn't too bad, and so that was kind of a blessing. The footing, I think, you know, they couldn't have done a much better job with the footing. I know Tim Price's horse slipped over, so I'm not saying it was perfect, but, you know, it's a pretty barren area, like naturally, and with, you know, looks like pretty limited amount of rainfall. And they laid sand down and blended it in with the natural soil, and then they put on a, they sowed down a like a Bermuda style or a golf course kind of style of grass that was irrigated, and you know, literally you could walk it with no shoes on. It was that soft and nice, and so there was some slippage there, but you know, overall, I think they couldn't have done a much better job with, you know, the conditions that they started from, and they were constantly going around, you know, they had attendants going around checking moisture levels in the soil and also the, how hard it was compacted. And so there was a big effort went to trying to get the footing as ideal as they could for the cross-country day.
How did your horse actually finish then, Philip, in terms of his fitness level and how he responded to that course and the other horses in general? What were your takeaways from that experience?
Well, you know, they're generally tired. There wouldn't have been many horses that just didn't get tired. I know, you know, and especially those guys that ended up taking any of the longer routes, that certainly put more pressure on them and they had to go faster. But, you know, they're tired, there's no question, and that's why you only do a couple of 4 stars a year, because it, you know, it's a big build up and they need time off. They're also, you know, pretty mentally tired, especially any of the horses that were not that experienced. But you know, I think all horses and all riders handle it differently. Like Chris Burton's horse is a very green horse. He's only done I think he's only done a 1 star, a 2 star, and then a 3 star, and went there, and he seemed to handle it pretty good. You know, my guy came out the next day and was, felt great, you know, and very fit. So I was quite pleased with his fitness part of it. And, you know, Happy's not a, he's not a full, you know, he doesn't have a lot of thoroughbred in him. He's got a big heart and he keeps going, even if he is pretty tired. But, you know, he recovered well and, you know, obviously jumped well the next day.
Well, a little bit of time added to your cross country. Any regrets in hindsight that you might have made that up? Did that bother you in the moment when you crossed the finish line?
Yeah, I mean, the time faults come because I had that hairy moment at 6A, and so I had to take the long option there. And I was sort of going to go direct there at 6A to B, and Happy kind of got to the jump and then couldn't understand where to go, and so it was starting to veer right, and so I held him into it. So if I think that it rode best the way that sort of Michael Young rode it, which was to get more square to the corner and bend it back in as sort of an S turn in a 5 stride, which, you know, I sort of Happy wouldn't be the nippiest horse around, you know, because he's a big bold horse, so I was sort of hesitant of riding it like that. But you know, probably if I had my time over again, I would have tried to come a bit more square to it so that he got more of an eye on it, and then took my chances a little bit more on the second one rather than the first one.
So it sounds like you had the horse you needed on the final day going into the show jumping phase. Talk about that track, Philip, and how it rode and and how you felt about your horse's performance generally after this.
Well, I was pretty impressed with the course and the designer and what he put out there, and keeping in mind that, you know, it's one of the hardest days that you'll put in as a horseman is, you know, in getting your horse to after he's been really tired and galloping for 4 miles the day before, is to get him to come back and to stay on a shorter canter stride and to jump up and round and carefully. And so I thought the course was very fair, and it was difficult without being overtaxing, and it wasn't too related. There was some related lines, but there was some forgiveness there where you could add a stride or go wider if you wanted to. Certainly the time was a little hard to get in the first round, and I think overall, you know, some of the horses going into that main arena paid the price and got nervous and had fences down because of that, and also just from being tired as well. So I couldn't be more proud of my horse the way that he went in there and actually, you know, focused on the jump and jumped very well. And then the second round they put it up, 5 centimeters, so, you know, it's getting up pretty big for these event riders to be jumping, but they make the course a little less technical. And unfortunately, I had the jump coming out of the combination down, which was kind of a long one to a short one, and we didn't have much chance there. That came down, but the rest of it, I thought he jumped well, and I come out and I looked up at my supporters, and I think Boyd said to me, "Oh, don't worry, you stayed in fourth." And so I was pretty relieved there, because I was worried that if I dropped the fence, I was going to drop out of it. And then I watched Chris Burton's round right up until he had two fences to go, and the last two fences were not coming down much at all. And I was just pretty relieved that I was going to stay in fourth. And then all of a sudden I heard everybody cheering and saw Evie crying, and I realized that I'd moved up to bronze. And so it was an incredible moment, and, you know, obviously not the greatest moment for Chris, but on knowing that horse and him, he'll have his chance again. And so we were really grateful to move up and end up in bronze position.
I'm sure, as an old mate of yours, Chris Burton, of course, and Sam Griffiths as well, close on your heels there. We know, Philip, that you're not a man to show your emotions too much, but when you said you turned to Evie and she was already in tears, you knew that was a medal-winning moment for you. What was Philip Dutton feeling like inside at that moment, and when you finally got to stand on the podium for an individual medal?
You know, like comes flooding over you, obviously. It's a quite emotional time having Marty Nice there, because my great friend Bruce Dutchessoir and I were, you know, so excited about this horse for most of his life. And, you know, a lot of the enjoyment in horses is in the dream and what you're planning to do. And I, you know, Bruce and I always believed in this horse and thought that he was going to do great things. And, you know, then for Bruce's life to be cut short and not to experience it, you know, doesn't seem quite fair. But, you know, I think somehow or other he was a part of this weekend, because it seemed to go everything. Well, we had to fight for it, but also, you know, the way that Mighty Nice kept going, and I don't know, somehow or other we were all connected there, I think. And so there's a lot goes into it. There's a lot of people that have, you know, it's not just me going up on the podium, and so many people help you, whether it's in the team and your coaches, or whether it's your family and Evie, or whether it's, you know, Carolyn Moran and Annie Jones and Kevin and everybody that's helped with the horse, and, you know, the other horses that nearly got there. And so it's a lot of people are really wanting the U.S. to do well. They want Philip to do well, but they want the U.S. to do well. They want their riders to do well. So it's kind of a combination of all of that. And to be able to walk up there, and, you know, in some ways I was representing everybody that has worked hard to try to get America on the map up there, and to see that American flag be raised up as I went up on the podium was, you know, was something I'll never forget.
And we should, of course, give a shout out to your very special groom, Emma Ford, of course, who was accompanying you down there. A special moment for her. She's seen so much triumph and tribulation with you in your career, Philip, so I'm sure she deserves a special mention.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, like, Happy, if you watch him, he had Emma all to himself for the whole sort of 10 days, and he just loves her, and it, like, every time he's walking around, he always looks around to see where she's at. And so I think that all helped as well, you know, that they do have such a special bond, and he's a really intelligent horse, actually, and sort of knows what's going on. And yeah, it's great for Emma. I mean, we've traveled the world together and done so much together, but you know, we've been on medal teams, obviously, in Pan Am Games. She hasn't been with me in an Olympic medal, and so this is another feather in our cap together. So it's really exciting, and couldn't have done it without her.
Quite the story, Philip, and of course a huge achievement for you to get on the medal podium, winning that bronze in Rio, and I'm sure that will bode well for the future and more from you and Happy in your career together. Are you going to tell us what you've got in mind for him now?
Unfortunately for him, he's still in quarantine in Miami, so you know, Brazil is not the easiest country to come back from. So I believe he gets out on Thursday, and then he'll get shipped back to Pennsylvania. And, you know, and I'll be totally honest, I haven't got any plans for him at all. So he's had a, you know, quite a big year, and he will. We'll just turn, you know, he'll have an easy time and see, make sure he come out of the whole trip well, and then we'll, you know, regroup and, you know, if he looks all right, we'll start again. But, he, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, that is, you, when you buy a horse, you know, we bought him as a six-year-old, and, you know, to a degree, his dreams have already come true, and so anything now is icing on the cake. So, you know, we'll just see him play by ear, you know, in no rush.
Absolutely. Plenty of time for him to enjoy pasture and a holiday. Philip, congratulations again on that bronze medal. And again, enjoy the celebrations, and thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, David O'Connor joins me now, fresh back from Rio, and I'm sure hardly touched the ground, David, and looking back over the last few weeks, lots of thinking going on about your performances, and we've talked to Philip Dutton on his individual bronze medal, of course, and so why don't we first of all start by celebrating his success?
Sure, I mean, there's nobody that deserves that medal more than Philip. I've, you know, starting this 3.5 years ago, you know, we were, you know, we've been friends for a long time. We've been competitors, and it's been a great friendship, continued friendship, leading on to this. And as I said, you know, for 25 years, you know, there's nobody who's tried harder. There's nobody that works harder. There's nobody that thinks about it more. There's nobody that actually, that I know of, that has such a sense of kind of almost humility about his riding and performance, and I, you know, it's been a joy to, you know, be a part of it, be a small part of helping along. I've, you know, it's been a fun conversations over these last years, and I literally could not be more ecstatic to have that happen for him as much as anything else.
And we heard from Philip earlier, David, about how, you know, he felt about his relationship with you over the years. You spoke to that just now, but how much respect you have for one another and how, of course, that has carried through in terms of his performance, because he's looked to you as the team chef and the coach, and that must have played a part in his success.
Well, I mean, you know, we've known each other for so long and as we said, competed against each other, but so a lot of it, we didn't have to break through any of that kind of thing. And so the talks at night, the working with horses, the, you know, the long time together ended up being some great conversations over these last years. And, you know, we've talked a lot about philosophy of training horses. We've talked a lot about individual different horses, how we would approach them, you know, and I think that's been a useful partnership between the two of us, and there's no question. I mean, there's no, you know, domination. There's no idea of that kind of stuff. This is a conversation between two horse people, and that have ridden at the level and played at the level for a long time. And so, you know, it was a lot of philosophical conversations about individual horses, about overall training, and it's you know, that's a very, you know, exciting and rewarding thing to be a part of. And as I said, the results shows, you know, that the conversation, I think, has, you know, been a two-way street that has got so much respect between the two of us that I'm just ecstatic that this thing has happened for me.
Well, certainly, and something.
Enough, it was actually something that we talked about in the first 2 weeks of me taking the job. You know, a big goal of mine was to get him up onto a podium, and I'm hopeful that this is not the last. But as an individual podium, because he's been up on team podiums before, and but as a major championship for him to get an individual medal, and I'm ecstatic for him that has happened.
Well, wonderful.
Hopefully, it's not a flash.
No, of course, no. I'm sure there are a lot more medals there. Well, a wonderful performance for him individually, but also, no doubt, of course, his contribution to the team effort. And we'll talk about how it was unfolded for all the other riders. But he brought so much team experience, as you said, to that performance as well, and would be helpful, no doubt, in strategizing with you when you're going into Rio in an Olympic Games like this, because that fine detail of strategizing is key to performance.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, that is a big part of it. And you never, as the day unfolds, you know, you have a plan going into it, but as the day unfolds, things can change, and you got to make a quick decision about which direction you're going to go in. You know, and we talked quite a bit, you know, within the first two riders about what, you know, what plans to go, because obviously we had walked the course, you know, I'd walked the course four times, and we walked the course, you know, together as a group and twice, and so we had a lot of plans about how fences were going to work and what fences were and what fences weren't, because there were obviously going to be fences on the course that were not going to be, that were not working as the course is under, you know, kind of set up. And, you know, but his wealth of experience and being such the cross-country rider that he is a great asset to the United States. You know, it's a great asset to me as a comfort and a person bouncing ideas, you know, back and forth off of. He brings a wealth of experience, you know, of 25 years of experience of playing this type of game. And truly, I think, is, you know, one of the top three cross-country riders in the world ever. And, you know, and that really, really does, you know, it gives you, you know, a place that you can, you know, have a conversation back and forth, bounce some ideas back and forth, and off we go, you know. So, you know, and he's very open. As I said, he's very humble. He's very open. He's very clear. He sees it in his mind, and that's a great, you know, kind of assets for anybody to be around, not just our country.
Let's back up a little bit, David, with each of those other performances there that comprise the US team. Let's start with arriving and how the horses arrived, how they were working in before dressage. Take us through those first few days and the dressage competition itself.
But I'd like to start a little bit farther back, and actually is our plan going there. And having, you know, one of the things 4 years ago was to try to create a summer event, and which is something that we didn't have, that had that be able to control footing. And, you know, I think the Great Meadow thing has really, really worked for us here in the last 3 years, giving them a place, because no matter if it's going to get hot and hard or whatever, through the watering of the course, it's going to make, you know, that makes a big difference. Because all the other years, everybody's gone to Europe, and everybody's gone over for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And we consciously decided not to do that. There's ups and downs about that, but I think it's more positive than negative about, you know, letting people be more home, be able to compete other horses, be able to keep sharp all the way, I think is the right way to go. And we went down to Florida, and the reason we went to Florida for the last 8 days was actually that's some of the best footing in the middle of the summer that we can go, because in Florida it rains. Even though it's hot, it rains three or four times a week. So being able to use Mrs. Morris's property down there, the footing was unbelievable. We rained, you know, four times when we were there overnight. The facility was great, and I thought all the horses came out of that in a great place to be able to go compete. They flew well. We landed. The site was, and we'd been there in 2007, and the site was better than where we were there the last time. Stables were great. Horses were comfortable. Good grazing for hand grazing out there. Plenty of places to ride. So I really think that Rio did a fabulous job for horses, for their comfort and their well-being, and their riders. We decided to stay in the village for the first time that we've ever done that since I've ever been around, which I think is the first time since, I think, like 1976. We decided to stay in the village, and I think that's a positive environment. And the reason we did that was, you know, not for any other reason, that we could guarantee security and guarantee transportation. Both of those things worked out. We had a transportation system through what they provided, you know, that 25 minutes later, buses left every half an hour, 25 minutes later, you're sitting on the site. So that gave kind of great comfort to everybody with no, you know, anxiety, or it was reliable. I think Rio's done a very, very good job with that side of it. And so the horses worked in great, you know, and I thought they prepared well. You know, you're trying to be quiet for the first three or four days to get them used to there, and also, you know, just over the trip. So So we're always trying to get the riders to go off and do something else so that there's not overtraining going on. So you did some, you know, sightseeing things. And that was, I think, all the way up till Wednesday, and then decided to start to kind of, you know, work the horses or prepare them. And I thought every horse was ready, you know, and I think the preparation felt very good with the horses being ready to compete. And then as we went on, you know, different horses went in different places, some surprised, some really stepped up. And, you know, but I thought coming into the first day, I thought the horses were ready and the riders were ready and the riders were confident about what they were going to do.
And what was the atmosphere like there? Because we've heard all kinds of things about the attendance for these events in Rio, not least of all in the Deodoro Stadium. How was that atmosphere and the, you know, the final moments for these riders? What did you, how did you feel that affected or not their performance? Was it a comfortable environment?
It was a comfortable environment. I think, well, you know, every one of these riders have been through big competitions before. And the two, you know, one of them had not been through a team competition before with Clark, but everybody had been in competitions before. And the setup was great with, you know, warm-up rings, preparation. You know, it's quite a big stadium. I'm not quite sure what the number, but I'm guessing it's probably a 10,000 person stadium. That was roughly, obviously, for eventing dressage, it's, you know, probably not even half full. So there wasn't a tremendous amount of atmosphere. We got a good draw, you know, of being the second to last team. And I thought all of the horses, you know, in leading up to the dressage work were about ready. We had, with the cheering of the crowd, we had a couple of horses. We changed the warm-up a little bit here at the last minute just to, you know, have work more on the communication side than brilliant side, just because they were, you know, the crowd did have an effect. The other two horses, you know, and I would say that with Boyd's horse and with Phillips' horse. So we were, you know, inventive a little bit about doing some long and low work, gymnastic work, instead of going for big brilliance. And I thought the other two horses with Clark's and Lawrence, that the horses, you know, that didn't seem to bother them, and we were working on brilliance, and, you know, and I think some of that, you know, paid off when, you know, the start of Clark's test was, you know, running about 78%, and then suddenly the wheels fell off for whatever reason. I'm not really even quite sure why. And Lawrence Horse got a little bit more nervous as the test went on. She came out of the walk work, you know, sitting on 74%, and then the canter, she was great, 72% all the way up until the last three movements, and the horse got quite nervous. In the last three movements, the judges just killed her. And, you know, but she was actually, the work was quite good all the way up to then. And, you know, that's something that we need to work on, the closing, you know, what I call closing. You know, you got to be a closer, and you got to be able to bring that competition. That'll be something that hopefully we'll work on in these next years about, you know, being able to close a competition, but or close a phase. And, but I thought that, you know, the presence of the riders, the quality of the riding actually was really good. You know, I think the horses looked well. Started to compete well, and then there was some mistakes at the end of the test that need to be, you know, our next stage of being able to close a competition.
And so coming out of the dressage phase then, David, you'd have walked the course sometimes already, and going into the cross country, given the conditions and the footing, all of those things you're familiar with Pierre Michelet's type of courses as well. What were your impressions and realistic hopes and expectations for the cross country before you actually saw it written?
Well, before, I would say that we knew that 6AB, which are those double set of corners, we would look right at the beginning where the horses understood it, and I didn't think they did. I mean, there were probably maybe 10 horses that jumped it all day. But even those ones that jumped it were, most of them, I would say, probably three of them jumped it great. The rest of them were kind of making it up. And so we decided to go around. We decided to be conservative. Made that decision with Boyd, made that decision then after that, you know, with Clark and then Lauren. We just told them to go around. The horses aren't understanding it. There was one surprise in the middle of the course that was fence 11. You know, a ditch and bank and three strides to an angled horses. I thought that actually was going to work much better than it did. And funny enough, the horses didn't cover up onto the bank that well. And so, there were a lot more problems there, and actually a lot of riders went around, but felt confident with our horses, and actually our, you know, those horses actually jumped it well. And then, you know, last, there were two other influential combinations, to log down to the triple combinations, which is where, you know, we really were worried with Lauren's horse, because that's, if she's ever had a problem before, it's ever been at a triple brush. And, that was influential all the way through the day. Our horses actually jumped that very well, all the ones that, that got there. And then, obviously there was this table, or, you know, kind of house, to a gate, which was, you know, quite difficult, but the line walked all right. And if you had the great, if you had the right shot going in off of the corner and jumping the side of it, we thought that the horses would do. And I think there were just the two problems there that way. But there was also a situation that a lot of teams decided to go on. So strategies, we were going to be, you know, conservative with a fence that the horses didn't understand, and then everybody would have to go in. Now, as you know, and then go on from there. And then, you know, and as the day unfolds, you know, Clark's horse just didn't seem, well, Boyd, I have to go with Boyd, you know, Boyd with a relatively green horse really just rode him brilliantly, very aggressive. You know, and then went the straight ways except for 6A, 6B. He had a trouble at that number 10, 11, sorry. And the horse really held up over the first one, and he was quick enough to be able to go a long way after that. And then went the straight ways after that. You know, he went, did the triple combinations very well with the triple brushes off the log. He did the corner to the gate. The horse seemed to read that very well, and then came home and, you know, and he did his job. So it was a great first round for us, you know, 2.6 time penalties or 2.4 time penalties. You know, he looked like he was, he rode exceptionally, exceptionally well, using all of the experience to get a green horse to go. And Clark went out next, and, you know, he had the first good three fences, but then the horse just never turned and never seemed to be in a game to want to be in that environment to, you know, hunt for fences. And he tried to nurse him around, you know, but then suddenly the horse just didn't want to seem to play. So, you know, I don't know what the reasons for that are, you know, and it's probably easy to look back on things, but I truly, truly don't know. Looking at the horse in the way that he's gone in the last 2 years, why that suddenly switched off. So then the decision with Lauren was, you know, and Lauren's pretty direct, and I made the decision actually to, I trust Lauren's riding, you know, and she had a brilliant round. There were a couple places in the course that we had talked about. We said if she wasn't good here, then I would take the conservative step next. So if she wasn't good at 8, she was going to go round 6, which she did. She wasn't good at 8, which there was a triple brush. I mean, there was a narrow wedge coming out of that. And if she wavered at all at that, then she was going to play conservative at the next things. And the mare just locked on, was great. Went up to 11. It just sailed through that. Just nailed it. I think one of the better rides of the day. Through the water, did the corner at the end, went down through her next, what I would call the next, you know, weak fence for her was the log to the two narrow brushes, and the mare just locked on and went straight down to it. So, you know, I think she felt very confident. The horse had been perfect. Went down to the next table to that gate, and we had talked about right before you left. We said if you get the right shot in and get the right first fence, then, you know, you're okay. If you don't have the right, so just automatically just go long. And that was the direction. I don't second guess that decision. I thought the mare was perfect all the way around. I will back her 100% for making that decision. The horse, you know, got a little bit onto the inside line and hooked it on the way up the gate. But I will back her 100% for doing that. And as I've said before, if that was a wrong decision on my part, because we should have been conservative there, which is not necessarily my nature. If that was the wrong decision, then that was the wrong decision, and it was my decision, and I'll take that. And so you were out. You know, you were out by inches. You know, literally one foot one way or another, it would have been a hero. And then, you know, Philip put a great round in. You know, he had the save of the day, probably the save of the decade. coming down to 6A, he went on a little bit more of an inside line that we had walked to that corner, and for some reason, Happy didn't really, read it, and still just saved it. I don't even know how he did it. It's a great picture, so I'm going to put that picture. It's going to stay up in my office forever. Ben actually had a foot-perfect round afterwards, just absolutely foot-perfect. So that was the day, and, it's sport. It's a game of inches. I'm very disappointed that we didn't bring that home, because we would have medaled if that had worked. But you can't second guess the decision at that point, and I will never second guess the rider ever.
Well, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? And I'm sure at the end of the day, especially at the end of cross country day, everything gets under the microscope as to what could have, should have, would have. But you came away with what you had, David, and I'm sure lots of experiences and takeaway messages. But let's just take the riders that did go through to the first jumping round. I mean, the two-round format on the show for the show jumping with inches added for the second round takes a lot out of a horse that, at that level. How did you feel personally about that format and what it did take out of the horses given the cross-country rides that they'd had?
Well, certainly it was the most influential course, cross-country course, that we've seen in, before the stats are saying, probably back to Barcelona in 92. So with that turny, twisty type of courses and having to make it up, and I think it's tiring for horses. And I think the cross-country, the short jumping actually didn't walk that strong. It didn't walk that tough. But I think because of the efforts of the horses the day before in that type of course, where they're not really quite sure where they're going. The lines are strong, very strong, which is Pierre's deal. And, I think there's not a lot of times where the horses understand. They're just reacting. That takes its toll. And so for Philip to come out and, Boyd first, we were fourth and seventh, we had two in the top 10, fourth and seventh going in the cross in the show jumping. And Boyd's horse was tired, and it's getting stronger and stronger over the years. But Boyd, I think, did a great job. Just had a rail down in the middle of the triple combination in the last fence. And I think that horse will just get better and better and better as he goes on, and he gets stronger within the system. And Philip, I thought, rode probably the show jumping of his life. He was very, very composed. He was very still. He was very elastic, which is something we've talked about. Richard Pickens, has been helping with the show jumping, and I think that's been really a big deal for Philip. It gives him a lot of confidence. And so suddenly the control of his upper body and the quality of his riding showed up that on that third day, he comes out and, has the round that he has, where he has clear round and, has one time penalty off of a horse that, historically hasn't showed up very well. And, I think Philip rose to the occasion. I thought he held his composure. He held his calmness, and he had the round, and that put him into the place going into the second round. The second round is shorter, not as many fences, using 9 efforts instead of 15, but a little bit bigger. But actually, a lot of horses actually jump, quite well on that third day in that second round. And the horse got a little strong right in the middle of the triple combination and had on the way out, but actually dropped the rest of it great. And with a young horse of Chris Burton's, being 9 years old and again, a real star, but still young in his life, that, he overjumped a couple things and then paid for it. And that gave Philip that bronze medal, which he so deserves.
I'm wondering now really what your biggest takeaways are, apart from mourning the disappointment of not having a team medal, from that Olympic performance generally, what it told you about those team riders, what it told you generally about the sport in this country?
Well, I think we're moving in. I think we're at a direction. We are playing a game. We just need to close it. But we are now, having two in the top 10 and one literally inches away from, having it work and having a beautiful round up to them. I think the quality of riding straight across the board is very good. And I think we're at a level where we're playing. We showed that here in the last year. We were not that far off. And You know, if we had played a conservative, there's no question that we would have medaled, or if I had played a conservative. But there we go. And that didn't happen. But I think the quality of riding is at the top level now. And I think there's, you know, there's improvement to go. Nobody's resting. But I do believe that we are playing the game and we're in the middle of the game. And I'm excited about, you know, young riders in the future. Obviously there's a big review that's going to happen. There's going to be review from riders. There's going to be review from the High Performance Committee, and there's got to be a review from the staff at the USEF about what this next 4 years, my contracts, have, you know, ends at the 1st of December. Those reviews will happen, and then whatever happens, whatever those plans are for the future, you know, I'm actually going to be quite excited about as we go forward.
And I'm sure you've been making copious notes since Rio, probably on the flight back. What do those notes look like as to, okay, this is what we should be doing now going forward for the next 4 years and hoping that eventing stays in the Olympic Games? What kind of notes does David O'Connor have in his notebook right now? What he's going to share with the people that matter?
I mean, one, I think we've shifted. I mean, I think we've shifted in an upward way. I think the when you look at the quality of the riding, I like the quality of the riding that you see. I think there's a closure side of the competitiveness that has to happen. And there's no question about kind of maybe raising that twist a little bit to make sure that people are closing the competitive side. I actually believe that the horsemanship side and the riding side is you know, quite good. And the staff behind the team of, you know, Vets and Blacksmiths and Joni Morris, and I mean, it's second to none. I mean, that is second to none. And then we have to reach out. We have to still reach out to younger riders to see who the next stars are. You know, we've got, you know, we took two new people to the World Championships the last time. We took two new people here to the Olympic Games that have never ridden, you know, in a big international competition besides the Pan American Games. So, you know, we have to keep doing that, and we have to put them back there again. And even if they make a mistake, you put them back there again, because that's going to pay off. We've got some really, really very, very talented riders. And I really do believe that you have to go back and you have to put him in again. Just, you know, if you're playing football, if you're playing basketball, you got to go and you got to go do it again. And we need to find out who those next rising stars are. I mean, I think we have an idea, but we need to pick those next rising stars and start to put them into international pressure and have them come up with a good. I haven't so much been a pressure person in this whole thing in this last 4 years, I don't think. And I think that, you know, because the first thing that we wanted to do is try to ride the raise the technicality of the riding and try to create a belief system. I think we've done those things. So now we got to put just a little bit of a twist to it more.
Well, we all know that so much hinges on the performance in the dressage arena these days for the sport. David, what do you feel we need to focus on there? Does it mean more competition in Europe for these to get that, to raise their game in the dressage arena while you're fine-tuning everything else?
Yeah, I think it's about the same level that we're doing. I mean, we're generally sending 15 or 18 trips over to Europe, and I think that's a good thing. I would like to see that more competitiveness happen here in the States by making the divisions a little bit larger and harder to win. That would always be a year at the upper levels. I think that's still an important part of it, to try to make it harder to win. I really don't like when, you know, somebody wins off a competition where there's only, you know, 7 or 8 or 10 people there, just because I don't think that the pressure is high enough. So I'd like to still make the at the upper levels only, make the divisions bigger so it's, again, harder to win. And like you do over in competition, when you actually look at the Olympic Games, right? There were, you know, I don't know, if you were 48, if you had a 48 or a 49, I think you were in 30th place. Whereas over here, you know, the big difference is, you know, if you got a 44 and you think you've done well, which is actually a good test, you know, 70, a little bit over 70%. Well, there's 10 people between 44 and 45. Whereas over here, if you do a 44, there's maybe one other person. And so I think that level of competitiveness needs to raise, still raise as a country. And I think actually making the divisions bigger would really help that, I think, at the upper levels. But the trips to Europe, you know, having 14 or 15 people, I think that's about the right level. We don't want to hurt the competition at home. We still want to make the competitions at home strong. But you have to be able to go against that people and then when those people over in Europe and work on your ability to see yourself winning. And I think that is a next stage here is you can only realize the dreams that you're going to see and that you can see. And I think we need to be stronger that they can actually see that. They can see themselves standing on a podium. They can see themselves that perfect test. And they can see themselves being successful in it. And that is a big push for me in the near future.
Well, you did mention identifying the rising stars of the future there, David. So what message would you send now to any USEA members who are listening who think, you know, one day I want to be an Olympian. What do I need to do to raise my game in all three phases to make the mark?
Yeah, the big thing is the basics have to be correct. Horsemanship has to be correct. Riding technique has to be correct. And that has to be first. And then understanding how horses think and how they move, I think that is the second thing. And then after that, then the point about, you know, the extra bit of what it takes to be a top competitor, that comes after that. But it's studying those basics. I always think about, you know, Tiger Woods and golf and that the higher the level I got, the more they end up working on the basics. And I think in that comfort level, and you see that around a lot. And I think so the correct horsemanship, correct riding, then the competitive twist comes in, but never at the expense of the other things. There are no shortcuts to it.
Okay, getting it right before you compete is the message from David. And absolutely. Finally, David, I have to ask you what your most personal takeaways were from these games for as an Olympian yourself. What did you enjoy most about Rio?
I think anytime you go in the Olympic Games, you're around 10,000 other athletes that have gone through the same thing that you've gone through. The ups and downs, the highs, the lows, the competitive drive that drives you to be better and better and better. That is always something that you get a tremendous feeling at when you're there. And it's very unusual. It's very unique. And it's very, we know that the road is very hard to get there. And you have to have a lot of things to work, not only to get there, but you have to have a lot of things work when you're there. And sport is hard. Sport at any sport. Any sport is hard. It is creates a level of emotion that has as wide of a range as anything you'll go in your life. And I think you're proud to be a part of it. You're proud to be there. And you hopefully will be back there again, as I would believe that these riders will be, and they're going to be better for it. I think that is the thing that you take away from Olympic Games is that pursuit of excellence, that being around a bunch of people that have that same pursuit in their own individual different sports. And that stays with you, and it stays with you for your life.
Well, let's not forget the stars of this show, the horses. As we speak, David, the horses will still be in quarantine. As far as you know, everybody's okay, traveled home well. Any updates on that?
Yeah, no, they've flown home really well. I mean, they left very well. They left on, they had a day, so we were done on Tuesday, and they had a really quiet day on Wednesday, and flew home on Thursday evening. And they're all in quarantine. It's a 7-day quarantine, unfortunately, coming back from South America. But all the horses are healthy and happy. They've got those guys staying down with them during that week, which is kind of a long week. But all the horses have come back well, and they've come back safe, and they've come back sound, all five of them. And we really do have to thank Lynn Szymanski for being the reserve down there, because that is it's a hard job to do where you are going down there, ready, but then, not able to compete. She was fabulous during that whole week. So all five horses are safe and sound. They'll be back in their stalls, you know, on Thursday, I hope, and, you know, ready for their vacations.
Any final comments or recognition, any thanks that you would like to add to this, David?
Well, I think you have to thank everybody. You know, you have to thank the staff that was behind the team. You know, they did a fantastic job. There's been a tremendous amount of support from the owners. There's been a tremendous amount of support from the fans all the way around. You know, so this is a program that, you know, really did say right from the beginning that, you know, that we have felt close. And I hope, again, to continue with it, that, you know, we will be successful. We will, we're on our road to be successful, and I really do believe that, and I really do hope that people keep their belief and keep believing that the USA is going to stand on, and those podiums. We're playing at an international road, didn't work this weekend, but I do believe we're really, really close, and this weekend will make us stronger in the end. Yeah, that good old song, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I'm hoping to be a part of it as we go forward.
Well, David, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and giving us your honest review of these Olympic Games. Appreciate your time.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
And you can find more coverage of the Rio Olympic Games on the website at useventing.com. And whilst you're there, be sure to check all the preparations lead up to this year's Neutrina USEA American Eventing Championships, which will be taking place at the Tryon Equestrian Center in North Carolina from August the 31st through September the 4th. And there'll be special coverage from the championships on the website at useventing.com. You can also catch up on all the breaking news by following us on social media. Just look for USEA. And also join us back here for the next episode of the USEA's official podcast, which you can download from the website or from iTunes to any mobile device. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.